You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll set a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America, the best idea since democracy.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, to The Rope Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, brought to you every week right here on RadioAryan.com by the numbers 14 and 88 and by the letters H and X and by your generous non-tax-deductible contributions through PayPal to Roper_Billy@yahoo.com every week, live and Wednesday. On RadioAryan.com, we bring you the news and political commentary from a perspective that you will not find anywhere else. Opinion from just to the right of Julius Stryker. This week on The Rope Report, I'm going to tell you some things that you will not believe, some things that I hardly believe that have been having right here in River City a tremendous impact on not only our white nationalist community and the alt-right, as well as the Antifa, as the battle wages and rages on the front lines of what will be our new America. I've told you in the past here on The Rope Report about how Arkansas is going to be one of those frontline states divided right down diagonally across Interstate 30 in between New America and the Republic of New Africa once America balkanizes. We got another great example of that this week to tell you about. Starting up north in Harrison, which is famous for being the hometown of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan and a sundown town. I lived there for a few years and really tore them up, taking on the Task Force Against Racial Diversity and their Machiavellian attempts to diversify Harrison by working with the state NAACP and with HBO, literally to bring in 1,000 blacks to this 90% white town, so they would become roughly 10% black, and then they could follow these blacks around in this 90% white town with their TV cameras for their reality TV show called Bringing Black to see if there was some kind of racial incident that might occur. Of course, being a reality TV production program, if there was not a racial incident, they would have provoked and created one to make it airworthy, to make it enthralling and watchable television. And the mayor of Harrison, Jeff Crockett, was involved in that scheme. He was also one of the main organizers, coming down as a carpetbagger from Chicago and turning Harrison and Boone County into a wet county. Previously, alcohol sales had been illegal. As a bootlegger and as a purveyor of liquor, he worked really hard to make sure that that was changed and to start the first liquor stores there in Boone County and the Harrison area. He also bought up a lot of real estate. So this Chicago carpetbagger, Jeff Crockett, who was elected by his cronies to be mayor, became my arch nemesis. And even though we were successful in having him defeated and run out of office, at the same time that we crushed the local task force on race relations so that all their female members resigned and replaced by male members who don't do anything, the battle in Harrison rages on. Recently, The latest chapter in that battle was fought when Catherine Golden, the Harrison attorney, that's right, Golden, can you hear the echoes? Catherine Golden, the Harrison attorney, who works for Jeff Crockett and for the anti-white Harrison, Arkansas Chamber of Commerce, got involved in an attempt to have two billboards that she did not approve of and her clients did not approve of removed from the side of the road just outside Harrison, Arkansas. Now, Harrison, being the home of the Knights Party and a lot of other white nationalists as well, is seen by many as a PLE, a pioneer little Europe, and a white nationalist town. The Shieldwall Network actually held demonstrations against a diversity festival and a gay pride parade in Harrison this summer, as well as an anti-Antifa demonstration after Antifa planned on holding a communist rally there previously, which we doxed them into dropping, playing whack-a-mole with them until they didn't even show up twice in a row. The local police informed us that they did not show up because they were afraid of us, and we're willing to take those officers at their word. Now, the Antifa and the Anti-White Task Force on Race Relations and the gays that run wild, prancing around Harrison at places like Ugo's Pizzeria there on the Harrison County Courthouse Square. Ugo's was where the cross-dressing drag queen festival was held recently before that gay pride fest. All these anti-white and faggot groups are working against the good white citizens of Harrison. And former Mayor Jeff Crockett owns a liquor store across the intersection, at the intersections of Highway 62 and 65 outside Harrison, where recently two billboards were taken down. Now, the top billboard was a simple picture of a healthy, safe, happy white family. And this healthy, safe, happy white family were giving some quotes that were in text on that billboard, saying things like, "Welcome to beautiful Harrison, Arkansas. No wrong exits, no bad neighborhoods." Now, when you say that a city or a town, whether it's Harrison or Little Rock or St. Louis, has no wrong exits, well, obviously people know what that means. When they say that a town has no bad neighborhoods, then people also know what that means. When we're looking at the reality of the situation in a place like Harrison, which is being diversified against the will of the majority of the citizens, many of those citizens moved to Harrison to get away from diversity, to get away from multiculturalism, from larger cities. And they say, euphemistically speaking, that they're moving to the Arkansas Ozarks for the fresh mountain air, for the lower crime rate, or the better schools. And those are all just excuses. The reality is they're trying to get away from niggers. They're trying to get away from spicks. They're trying to get away from all the freaking faggots. They're hoping that they can move to a homogeneous, healthy, old-fashioned white town. And that's what they were doing, but unfortunately some of them moved there and forgot why they had moved there and want to turn Harrison into exactly the kind of multiracial third-world cesspool that they had escaped from to begin with. Their liberal guilt is just too much for them to overcome, and without being faced daily with the threat to their survival, without having to see a majority non-white population every day as they go to and from work or school, their guard comes down. And they stop caring about their people. They forget why they left those third world cesspools to begin with, and their guilt makes them want to bring in a little bit of liberalism, a little bit of diversity, just to take the curse off the place that they live, and to show that they're not really evil, racist, hateful Nazis like me that want to kill 6 Guerrillion Jews. In Harrison, that fight goes on internally and externally every single day. Now, two gentlemen were pictured a couple of years ago holding a banner that said diversity equals white genocide at different prominent locations all around Harrison, Arkansas. One of those locations was at the Harrison Chamber of Commerce building in front of the Harrison Chamber of Commerce sign, as well as at the college and the city limits sign and at the high school. Catherine Golden, the attorney in question, called me at the time and asked me if I was the person who was holding that banner on the Chamber of Commerce parking lot and wanted to talk tough about people being sued and prosecuted and taken to court for trespassing and for besmirching and slandering the reputation of the Chamber of Commerce, who did not approve of that message, and I stopped her cold. I said, "Ms. Golden, let me clarify something for you right now. The person in that picture, whomever they might be, just judging on that picture, what I see in that picture and the person there, I'm a pretty good judge of psychological character, and I think that anyone who would do something like that, who would stand in front of the Chamber of Commerce sign holding a banner that says diversity equals white genocide, that kind of person is probably not afraid of publicity. They're probably not afraid of being identified. They're probably not afraid of being called a racist or a hater or a Nazi. And probably they would enjoy the opportunity to get more publicity. Probably I would guess that that person is dox-proof, and that person is lawsuit-proof, and that person is tort-proof. They cannot be bankrupted or intimidated by any threat of legal action or civil suit. And probably this person, I'm just guessing here, of course, this person would love the opportunity to take this whole discussion into a court of law, and then they would call a press conference, and they would get national media coverage for their banner and for the case. And I don't think that your clients want that kind of national, what by them would be perceived as negative media publicity, but I would just imagine, being the judge of character that I am, that whoever was in that picture holding that banner saying diversity equals white genocide in front of the Harrison Chamber of Commerce building would probably love it. They'd probably get a kick out of it. And so that was the end of our conversation. For some reason, she didn't want to talk to me more, and it hurt me deep, deep that she did not want to talk to me again. But now she's still working for Jeff Crockett, the Chamber of Commerce, and she pounced on the opportunity as soon as there was a lapse in the permits for these two billboards being removed. Because the lower billboard, the one she really hated, said diversity equals white genocide. And so they have these two billboards removed now from Harrison, and they think that they've won. But the reality is that people are actively looking for two new billboards that they will buy near Harrison within the city limits that they can put those messages back up on, and they will never, ever come down again. So there was media publicity nationally when the billboards went up, and there was media publicity nationally when the billboards came down, and there will be media publicity nationally for the message, carrying it to the masses and to normies, when those billboards go back up once again, as they inevitably will, and they stay up next time. But Harrison is not the only place in Arkansas where this battle is being fought. This last weekend, we held a meeting of the Shieldwall Network in Conway, Arkansas, at a local cafe. And we had great turnout with several speakers. We had over 30 people present and about a half dozen speakers. And the general outline of that meeting of the Shieldwall Network in Conway, Arkansas, can be read about at the Roper Report website, either at theroperreport.whitenationalists.net or at theroperreportsite.wordpress.com, or simply by going to whitenationalists.com. All three of those addresses will take you to different versions for redundancy and security of my blog, The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization blog, where you can read every day new updated news and opinion articles that you will not find anywhere else. That article describing our meeting in detail, including three videos of me speaking at that meeting, can be found on the Roper Report website. And also, what came after the meeting was unfortunately as dramatic as the meeting itself. Here in Arkansas, we are waging a war against Antifa. We have embarrassed and humiliated them so many times, consistently, over and over again, and shown them to be bitches and punks, that they are panicked and they are desperate to try to regain some of their ego that they have lost. We've taken away from them, stripped them of all their pride. what they actually did was identify from some of the interior pictures taken at the meeting, the cafe where it was held, and then they attacked the cafe owner. And what actually happened with this meeting is, to be frank, and I'll take full responsibility for this, the buck stops here as the leader of the organization. It's my task to take it. So we actually rented this cafe when it was closed for the weekend from one of the employees. And the employee whom we rented it from was under the impression that we represented a conservative group, a right-wing group, but they had no idea the extent to which we were right-wing or how extreme our political views were. They also had no idea what kind of imagery would be present there or the tenor and tone of our discussions. So the employee actually misrepresented to the boss what kind of group had rented the cafe for the day while it was closed, because the employee themselves had had the nature of the group misrepresented to them and they had been misled. Unfortunately, that is the political climate that we live in today, where people like myself, people like the Shieldwall Network, who hold the same political ideals as our nation's founding fathers, have to be furtive and concealed in order to express the same ideals that our founding fathers expressed when they were creating this nation. It's a sad commentary on the lack of First Amendment rights and freedom of speech that when we attempt to secretly or privately express our political views, we're attacked and threatened by these Antifa, by Black Lives Matter, and by these communist and anarchists who literally want to kill anyone who disagrees with them, and they want to destroy any vestige of white culture and heritage, and they want to make our entire white race extinct through ongoing genocide, through pushing the diversity, which by definition is white genocide. So these Antifa and these Black Lives Matter and these communists and anarchists joined together to attack the cafe owner and to try to give a negative reputation through ratings online to her cafe. They tried to go after the employee who had mistakenly rented the cafe to us on the owner's behalf. And then they, of course, went after us. Now, they're not only going after us through this cafe rental and in reaction to our meeting there Saturday. They're also going after us through all of our social media outlets. And they're going after various members of our Shieldwall Network who were involved in other meetings, other places, and other activities. And they're literally coming after us personally and coming after our family members, which is why we are responding in kind to show them that doxing is a two-way street. This morning, in response to the meeting and the fallout on social media over it, there have been three mainstream news articles, as well as radio and television reports, about these 30 people, nonviolent people, political activists, expressing the same perspectives as our nation's founding fathers, meeting privately in a cafe where nothing illegal was said or done and nobody was hurt, made statewide news. The first article was in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the statewide newspaper. And the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, you have to understand, having a monopoly on statewide newspaper news all through the state of 3 million people, is controlled by its 80-year-old Jewish editor, Mr. Paul Greenberg. Once again, insert the echoes. Paul Greenberg is a Holocaust survivor who was never in Europe but still survived the Holocaust. And he's the guy who keeps his thumb on the editorial content and the tenor of the entire newspaper and therefore has an inordinate degree of influence and control over Arkansas statewide media as a whole. Now, Mr. Paul Greenberg is on his way to retiring and he's going to pass off editorial control to loyal Shabbos Goy. They'll carry forward his anti-white agenda. But he, and through him, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, used Antifa and the Boston Mountains ARA group through Facebook as an unvetted, unverified primary source to describe not only the nature of the meeting, what was discussed at the meeting, who was at the meeting, what the meeting was about, and every other aspect of this so controversial private meeting in a cafe of 30-odd patriots. Without asking me, even though I was named in the article, for a comment or questioning me or talking to anyone else except for Antifa. So, according to Paul Greenberg, the Jewish editor, and according to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the statewide newspaper, Antifa, specifically the Boston Mountains ARA, are now apparently a primary source which does not require any kind of verification or vetting. They're willing to, this is Lugan Press, this is the fake news, they're willing to quote verbatim social media posts from Facebook of communist, anarchist, Antifas as if it was just straight news. Now, we're used to them quoting the Southern Poverty Law Center. They threw them in as well, talking about me. We're used to them quoting the ADL. But it's really interesting that they're now quoting the Antifa directly as if they're authoritative sources. I don't think they understand how disconnected quoting Antifa makes them from mainstream middle class and working class whites who see right through that kind of Lugan Press fake news. It's kind of like, on a slightly different topic, to segue off for a moment, it's kind of like, I don't think that the 10 Jews who are NFL franchise owners really understand how disassociated it makes them and their corporate companies from the mainstream white middle-class sports fans who pour millions of dollars every year into the NFL through their advertising and through their game merchandise and memorabilia, for them to promote Colin Kaepernick and the new widespread Take a Knee program that they've been promoting. They don't understand that whatever else these mainstream middle-class and working-class white guys who are football fans may be, maybe they are just conservatives and rednecks. Maybe they are enjoying their football like the Roman citizens enjoy the gladiatorial games as panna circensa, as bread and circuses to distract them from their normal mundane lives and their disappointments and frustrations and the way they've turned out or their work. Whatever else they are, they also are at core, ostensibly and intrinsically, patriotic Americans. Because for years we've been told by the establishment, by the elite that these Jews have foisted upon us, that we should celebrate our commonalities. What civic nationalism has been based on is our unity. And that unity, of course, can no longer, as it is in a traditional, holistic, natural nation, be based on race or ethnicity or origin or any other cultural or linguistic commonality. That unity can only be based on a nation based on laws, a nation based on adherence to symbolism, and a implied loyalty to those symbols, which are supposed to, according to civic nationalism, connect us and unify us. So we've been told by these civic nationalists all along, by the establishment, by the elite, like John McCain and George Bush, that what unites us as a nation is not our race or our ethnic background or our culture or our religion. What unites us as a nation is being Americans and standing up to salute the flag and for the Pledge of Allegiance and for that national anthem that all of these niggers chasing the pigskin are taking a knee for. Now, NASCAR, knowing that they have a white audience and not having forgotten that yet completely, even though they've been trying to ban the Confederate flag, have told their team members that if they take a knee for the national anthem or if they don't stand for it, they'll be fired. Donald Trump has weighed in with the civic nationalist viewpoint, telling them that if the coaches see these black football players taking a knee for the national anthem, that the son of a bitches, as he said, should be fired. And that played well with his base. It plays well with the majority of Americans. It especially plays well with the overwhelming majority of white Americans. White Americans who are football fans. So the 10 Jews who are owners of club franchises in the NFL, I understand obviously why they're doing it. The others are thinking that it's a politically correct thing to do, so they're doing the bandwagon effect. And even the white players are going around because they don't want to get beat up in the locker room or called a bad name or get fired from their multi-million dollar contracts because another player accused them of being racist for not taking a knee. I get it. It's the same kind of peer pressure that all of us face. As a matter of fact, people don't understand why I'm undoxable. Another one of the articles by RawStory.com posted today about our meeting this last Saturday actually identified me as the employee that was fired. And you can go to RawStory.com or you can actually go to the RopeReportSite.wordpress.com and read the article entitled, "I Lost My Job, But I Will Keep Fighting for Our Race." And it's my copy and paste of this article which identifies me as being the employee of the cafe who held my meeting there and was then fired by the owner for holding the meeting there. And it just over and over again, Billy Roper, the former employee, Billy Roper misled his boss, Billy Roper, Billy Roper, Billy Roper. And that's fine if they want to go that route. That's cool. Another article about it in the Arkansas Times, written by morbidly obese Max Brantley, published this morning. You have to understand that Max Brantley is pissed off at the world, pardon my French, because he recently lost an extreme eating competition to the SPLC's Heidi Byrick just by a chin. He's a senior editor of the Arkansas Times newspaper, and he once did a full cover story on the rise of white nationalist Billy Roper in Arkansas. But now Brantley and other leftists here in the state try their best not to give the growing number of alt-right and identitarians in Arkansas any news coverage, but, you know, sometimes they just can't help themselves. They just can't resist. So, you know, as old Maxie Pat himself admits at the bottom of the article, he covers the meeting and how the meeting was doxxed and says some quotes from the SPLC about me and I'm a bad guy. And at the end he says, "I confess I tried to ignore this controversy when it first developed because inevitably it achieves exactly what Roper desires, publicity." And I guess he does have a point there, but the greater point is that he was unable to resist giving us that publicity, and that many people have actually come forward now, emailing me over the last 24 hours here in Arkansas. They found the website through just Googling my name and the Shieldwall Network name. And now, through finding the website, they found our contact information, and I've actually had over about a dozen, 11, I guess, people that are now new members of the Shieldwall Network over the last 24 hours, just based on these newspaper articles and yesterday's primarily attack of the Boston Mountains ARA on the people involved in that meeting and them mentioning me in the Shieldwall Network and talking about us having the meeting there. People are feeling like they were left out. They would have been glad to come to the meeting too if they had known about it. Now, our next meeting will be on private property and there will be no filming or photography allowed, just to add an extra layer of privacy and security for those who do attend. But what the Antifa do not understand is that when they attack us, they help us to grow, because there's an inevitable backlash to the attack on free speech of the First Amendment and to the attack on our people as a race that is happening, that is building up, just like when there's an earthquake at the shoreline. It creates a tsunami as a backlash effect a few hours later. Antifa are creating a backlash against themselves, not only because we will now dox them and let every single member of their family and all their friends and all their employers and all their kids and all their spouses know that they support communism and anarchism and the extinction of the white race through genocide, but because a civil war is coming in this country and everyone at this point is choosing sides or having one chosen for them. The backlash is going to be, man, it's like Louis XIV said, "Après moi, le déluge." Louis saw the French Revolution coming and knew that. He said, "After me, the deluge. After me, the flood." And it was a flood of blood. And that blood ran through the streets of Paris. The guillotine got thirsty. You know, yeah, after me, the deluge. After us, the deluge is coming. And they're creating it. It's their chutzpah, their hubris, their arrogance. They just can't help themselves. They do it over and over again 109 times, and this time we're just going to have to finish the job, I guess. But just like the Antifa do not understand that their attacks on us are creating this backlash, which will be their destruction, the club owners who are working with the Jewish club owners in the NFL by supporting the Takeaneers, by going against Donald Trump and going against the Americans, the white Americans, the working class Americans, the blue collar middle class Americans who pay their bills, who pay their salaries by paying for the advertising on the TV games and buying the jerseys. Those are the people that are going to switch off the set. I've seen so many videos on YouTube and on Twitter over the last 12 hours or so of long-term, lifelong, die-hard football fans burning their jerseys and burning their footballs and burning their helmets and burning their pennants, burning all their gear. Now, you know, from my perspective, I get it. I really do. I understand. I was raised in the South where football is huge, and I grew up playing football, but I was probably 11 years old. I was playing peewee football and then junior high football, high school football. And once you're after in high school, Arkansas is a deep football state. There's no professional teams in Arkansas, just to give you some perspective, but there is one monolithic team, the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, whether it's basketball or baseball or football, but especially basketball and football. Everyone in Arkansas bleeds Razorback red. We have more pride in that college team than most states and most large cities of our size have in their professional sports franchise teams, if they have one. So I understand what it is like to have that football culture inculcated very deeply into your heritage, being from Arkansas. I get it. And I've often railed against it. I've often told football fans, even friends of mine, that when you are sitting there watching a bunch of monkeys chase a ball in front of your little white daughter, you're showing her who the alpha male is. You're showing her what a hero looks like. You're holding up this obsolete farm machinery as if it's something to be respected and admired and emulated. You're showing them what you have idolatry for. And if you idolize these black thugs, then you cannot be surprised if your little white daughter, who sees you looking up to these nigger football players, someday wants to bring one home for dinner, because you've taught her what a hero looks like. You've taught her who alpha males really are. And that's what little girls look to their dads for, as examples to learn what kind of guy they should try to get. So I've told sports fans over and over again that they're sowing the seeds of their own family's destruction by being fans of these monkeys. And that's true not only at the college, but also at the pro level for NFL fans and NBA fans as well. I understand that professional and college sports have kind of sublimated our natural and instinctive, healthy alpha male desires for conflict and for combat and for tribal competition, to the point that those healthy instincts to divide up into sides and go to battle with one another is kind of distracted like a steam pressure release valve by identifying with some abstract team, even a team that doesn't represent geographically where you live, and you don't know anybody on that team, but you identify with that team, like it's your tribe, and you're going to war with another tribe, that you hate that team, even though you don't know anybody on that team, you've never been in that city that you hate, their sports team. So you're actually sublimating your own natural, healthy, masculine desire for combat by imagining yourself to be a supporter and part of this one team against another team. So it's part of the male instinct for war, for fighting, that is being released by being a sports fan, vicariously. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that vicarious existence is a waste of time, a waste of resources, a waste of your energies, a waste of your potential, and a waste of your lives. When we have a very real fight going on for the survival of our race, and the uniform for that battle you were born with. As long as you keep it, that is the only uniform that you need. As long as you keep it, that is the only team that you should cheer for or spend your money on. That's the only team that you should show up to support. It's the only team you should get fighting mad over. The team whose uniform you were born wearing. Not the Redskins or the Cowboys. Not the Raiders or the Patriots. The white race. And so I tell sports fans this over and over again. And I think that a lot of them now are waking up. Because when these sports team owners, these franchise officers, are going against Trump and going against the American flag, going against the national anthem, siding with these Black Lives Matter and Colin Kaepernick and the Take a Knee group, when they're telling their players that they support them protesting against the national anthem and protesting against America and being anti-American and anti-patriotic, they are alienating their fan support base. I don't think it's something that's necessarily going to blow over. I think it's part of the accelerating, building, snowball effect that culturally we are dividing, polarizing, balkanizing as a nation into separate camps. I believe it's going to cripple the National Football League, but that's small potatoes compared to the signpost along the way to Civil War II that it represents. Because here's the takeaway from the NFL drama, folks. What it all means when they take a knee is that civic nationalism has failed. And civic nationalism has failed precisely because all of those symbols, those empty, meaningless symbols that they tell us are what holds us together, they no longer hold us together. Because at least one side has decided that they're no longer going to pay their respects to those empty symbols. White people still can, and they may adopt those symbols. We may end up having a white ethnostate that uses some version of the American flag and the Star-Spangled Banner as our anthem, and that'll be fine by me if the other side abdicates it and comes to hate it. Because symbolism doesn't really matter to me. My race, my people is what matters to me. If we end up adopting those symbols because the other side has rejected them, literally, then we'll be happy to take them on and carry them forward and to redefine them once again back to their original intent as representing a white republic, a white nation, just like the founding fathers meant for them to be when they first created them. That's why they hit the Star-Spangled Banner, because in the fifth stanza, Francis Scott Key wrote about the fact that escaped black slaves had joined the British side to fight against the American colonials who were seeking their independence. And because that stanza, even though it's almost never sung, is still in the Star-Spangled Banner, Black Lives Matter, Colin Kaepernick, and the NFL team owners that support them and condone that shit, see the Star-Spangled Banner as being racist. Well, they're getting close because now they're recognizing Thomas Jefferson is racist, George Washington is racist, all the Founding Fathers are white nationalists, even the Star-Spangled Banner was racist, and they're getting close to the reality of accepting the fact that this was established as a nation of, by, and for white people to their exclusion. So if they want to rebel and reject against all the symbols of this nation, then we then will be on a better standing on the moral high ground, ethically speaking, and optically speaking, by having those symbols of our own, which then have been rejected by our enemies. So great, we'll take it, we'll run with it. Let them be the anti-Americans, let them be the anti-patriots, let them be the traitors in the eyes of so many millions of white Americans, and let them come to equate white nationalism. Let them come to equate racism with Americanism. Let them come to equate the Star-Spangled Banner and the red, white, and blue flag with Nazis who want to kill 6 billion more Jews, if that's the way that the BLM and Kaepernick and the NFL bosses want to play it. So, civic nationalism has failed. Their idea that these empty symbols that bind us together, the flag and the Star-Spangled Banner and the Pledge of Allegiance. Their idea that those could overcome our racial differences and our religious and cultural differences have proven false, because they no longer, the other side, they no longer are buying it. How ironic, how beautiful, how efficient and effective for us that they are the ones who are taking the knee. It's good that they remember their proper place on their knees. Time will come when we'll finish the job and put them on their backs. So, this coming weekend, as we move forward past the doxing, which was an after effect of the very successful, otherwise, Shieldwall Network meeting this past weekend in Conway, Arkansas, which was the largest attended ever and very successful meeting. As I said, you can go to the website, the Roper Report website at whitenationalist.com or at theroperreport.whitenationalist.net, or just type in whitenationalists.com and read the details and see the three videos from that meeting this Saturday, if you were not able to attend. And then you can go to the Shieldwall Network website to find out how you also can join us and our coalition in learning how to be a person of influence in your community today. This community grassroots patriotic outreach organization, which has so many liberals and lefties running scared, not just all across Arkansas, but across the country as it grows exponentially. That website for the Shieldwall Network can be found at theshieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. Once again, that's theshieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com. Now, if you can't remember theshieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, I'd like to announce that you can now go to another, shorter, more succinct URL to find the Shieldwall Network website. You can go to arianwarrior.com, and there you will see a symbol that represents the Shieldwall Network, the Spartan Lambda. And above that Spartan Lambda is the text, "Are you an Arian warrior? Click the shield to find out more." And when you click on that shield, guess what? It takes you directly to the Shieldwall Network website, where you can read the About page and find out how you can register to get started on your local activism and becoming a person of influence in your community by starting or joining a local Shieldwall Network franchise. Once again, that short URL to get to the Shieldwall Network website, tell all of your friends, post it all over your social media. It's arianwarrior.com, arianwarrior.com, arianwarrior.com. As we continue to process the ongoing media reaction to our meeting and the growth of the Shieldwall Network here in Arkansas, we're planning for next weekend as well for the Stormfront Replacement Conference in Eastern Tennessee. I know that for the last few weeks, some of you have not been able to access the Stormfront Forum. You haven't had a chance to do the DNS workaround into your host file to actually get back on the board, so to speak. But even if you have not, you still have time to get ready to attend the Stormfront Replacement Conference in Eastern Tennessee, in the Knoxville area. Next weekend, it's going to be Friday, September the 29th, and Saturday, September the 30th, with some activities continuing on Sunday, October the 1st. And for information about how you can get to the Stormfront Replacement Conference, if you've been vetted and approved, then I encourage you to email me for details. My email address is roper_billy@yahoo.com. Once again, that email address is roper_billy@yahoo.com. And that is the same email address that you can use to make donations to the Shieldwall Network or to the pro-white Cover Our People With Love charity through PayPal. That's roper_billy@yahoo.com. Or you can send your generous non-tax deductible contributions through the mail to Billy Roper, P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Once again, that's P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. To give those of you who have had an opportunity to register for the previous Stormfront Conference an update, this meeting in Eastern Tennessee, the Stormfront Replacement Conference, will be free of charge. Let me repeat that. Everybody likes something free, free of charge. Oy vey, no shekels. Oy vey, free of charge, but only to goyim. Goyim only, free of charge. And Jews not allowed, obviously. But this Stormfront Replacement Conference in Eastern Tennessee, not charging anything, will require you to provide your own food and lodging and transportation in exchange for just showing up, in exchange for just sharing with us your most valuable asset, your time, and your ideas. You'll have an opportunity to speak with me, Billy Roper, and to hear me speak about activism in real life. You'll also have an opportunity to hear about activism from Matt Heimbach, the Traditionalist Worker Party leader, and from Dr. Michael Hill, the leader of the League of the South, as well as people like Pastor Thomas Robb and Rachel Pendergraft of the Knights Party, Father Francis of Stormfront Radio, and many other activists and leaders who you've been familiar with for years in the alt-right and white nationalist movement. Now, people like, you know, myself and Father Francis and Dr. Michael Hill and Matt Heimbach will be leading these breakout focus groups as we work to brainstorm future activists for the coalition that we're building in the white nationalist and alt-right unity front. It's moving forward after 1.0 to take the truth to the normies and to radicalize, moving the Overton window of acceptable political discourse to the right, and along with it, dragging, kicking and screaming that Hegelian dialectic as we get closer and closer towards Balkanization and the breakup of the United States of America and the inevitable rise of our white ethnostate. We're working together to secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, regardless of our other differences. This coalition will have a great start this next weekend. I'll have an opportunity to speak with many of you Friday evening before we actually begin the speeches and the workshops and the seminars that will follow my discussion, scheduled for 9:45 Saturday morning. Now, if you need to know where this location will be, if you'd like to make reservations to stay in a local hotel, if you'd like to get in touch with those who are organizing it to make sure that you're included to this free activist conference, I encourage you to email roper_billy@yahoo.com. And if you are a member of the alt-right, if you are an adherent to white nationalism, I encourage you that whatever you're doing this next weekend is not more important than getting together with myself and Matt Heimbach and Dr. Michael Hill and Pastor Thomas Robb and Father Francis and all the other leaders and activists who are coming together this weekend in Eastern Tennessee to move forward for the 14 words at this East Tennessee Activist Conference. Once again, email me, roper_billy@yahoo.com. I'd like to meet as many of you as possible this coming weekend at the Stormfront Replacement Conference. It's free of charge in Eastern Tennessee, and I'll see you there. Now, planning this event takes a lot of time, so I'll cut this week's podcast short by saying, as always, think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white. Deutschland!
Deutschland! 8% of the U.S. population is willing to publicly identify themselves as being white nationalist. 8%. Now, in my lifetime, that's the highest that it's ever been. That's a result of many factors, which we don't have time to get into today, from Trump's campaign, his election, and the crisis over DACA and the border wall, and what happened in Charlottesville, which we're going to hear about today, a couple of guys who are actually there. And everything else that's coming is a backlash against our people as we're recognizing that we're being pushed towards minority status and eventually extinction. And many of us are standing up and fighting back. It's also a result of the fact that they've overused the term racist and Nazi and white nationalist so much that they've taken the curse off of it. It doesn't hurt anymore. There's no more sting attached to it. People say, so what? I'm a racist because I don't want my people to become a minority in the country that was built by white people, for white people. Literally, the United States of America was established by white nationalists to be a white nationalist nation. The Founding Fathers said in 1790 when they wrote the Naturalization Act, defining who could be a citizen, that only white people could be citizens of the United States. And just in case people might think that was a mistake or a one-off, 5 years later they doubled down and they wrote the Naturalization Act of 1795, where they said that only white people of good moral character could immigrate to the United States and become citizens. So if all the founding fathers of our nation were white nationalists, and they were, then we are all in good company. Remember that we are not traitors, we're the real patriots. We're standing up for what this country was designed and created to be, a white nation. So if you want to have a white nation once again, then by definition, that makes you a white nationalist. And so many Americans like us in this room are recognizing that that's a better future for their children and their grandchildren than what would otherwise come to us if we did nothing. And we're told over and over again that the only thing that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. If we do nothing, we face eventually minority and then extinction status. 8% of the U.S. population say that's not a future they're willing to accept. So they're publicly willing to accept being called a white nationalist now. You break it down, 323 million Americans, that means that 8% of them equal about 26 million Americans are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. 26 million Americans are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. And Arkansas has 3 million people, so imagine between 8 and 9 states the size of Arkansas, full of people just like us who are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. Not being afraid of being called a racist or politically incorrect. There's a whole bandwagon effect when you ask a person a poll question in public where they want to go along with the consensus. They don't want to be the only that guy. We all have that. It's a, no offense to the ladies, it's a feminine attribute, but our whole society has been feminized. There's women of both genders now who say what they think they're expected to say. But at 8%, if 26 million Americans are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists now, then that means that we're winning. And that's why our enemies are afraid. And that's why they're trying to dox people and get them fired. That's why they're trying to put people in jail. That's why they're trying to shut down websites and deplatform internet portals. That's why they're trying to shut us up. Harder than ever. Because they are desperate. Because it's a panic. It's their fight or flight response kicking in, because the Jews know that 109 times in the past they've been kicked out of every country that they've ever parasitically infested. It's going to happen again. We're going to make it 110. This time we're going to finish the job. On the way, we have 26 million Americans, at least, they're already willing to publicly say that they're not ashamed to be called white nationalist. And there's about 36 of you here in this room right now, and there are others in the state. We're not the only ones. We're the ones who have the opportunity and the willingness and set of priorities to take this day and to be together. And some of you in this room I've known for 20 years, 25 years. Some of you I have not met before today. And that's cool. It shows how much we're growing. In the past, 5, 10 years ago, if you go into a meeting like this, if there'd been one, you might find half the size of the crowd, Hans can tell you, are smaller, and the average age of the person attending would be 70 years old. Look around you. Look at the average age. I'm not going to call anybody out, but most of you are younger than me. And that's cool. We are the future, and that's what scares them, and they ought to be afraid. Okay, because as a person of faith, I believe that the victory that we're going to have is inevitable, it's preordained. We might lose a battle or two along the way, but the end result is already prophesied. We're going to win. And ultimately, only question is, people are going to decide somewhere along the way when we reach that tipping point. In 1775, as you take in a poll like they took this last week, 3% of the U.S. population in 1775, 3% of the American colonial population said they're willing to have independence from Great Britain. In 1775, 3%. That means that right now, more than double that number are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. How close are we to the tipping point? I can't tell you. I'm not a prophet. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what kind of crisis trigger scenario it's going to require to remove the vacuum of federal government power. But I can tell you that we need to be ready when it does. I don't know if it's going to be a natural disaster or an EMP attack from North Korea or an economic collapse like a credit bubble exploding. But I can tell you that when it happens, we're not going to have the internet to talk to each other on. We're not going to have the complex fabric of technological society to lean on. We're going to be literally moved back to 19th century ethical living. And when that happens, as I've said, the reason for the Shilwall Network is that I want to be able to have a group of friends like you guys here in this room that I know I can rely on for mutual aid and assistance. The Shilwall Network began as a white nationalist preppers organization, so that we can look forward to the future, whatever may come, whatever level of disaster might happen, and be able to prepare for it, so that we can become persons of influence in our community and help one another out and actually gain control of local communities, so that when there's a vacuum of power at the local level and people are asking, okay, you were right. You told us. You saw it coming. We didn't believe you. Now it's here. Now what? What next? And we can look them right in the eye and say, okay, yeah, I told you so, but let's move forward. Now, here's what's next. And we could be the people that are the shot callers in our local communities, deciding who defends those borders, whether or not they let in refugees from big cities that are starving to death, making sure that we control how resources are allocated, and so that our children will not be the ones starving. We could do this to secure the existence of our people in the future for white children all across this nation, one community at a time. So the Shilwall Network is a grassroots-based community organizing platform. It's a white nationalist preppers platform. And we also do activism. We do political action. Because the way to become a person of influence in your community and to identify those who are going to be willing to have the backbone to stand up with you is by standing up first, by being that example for them to see and to follow and to be inspired by. Because if 26 million Americans already believe like we do, enough that they'll say, okay, I'm a white nationalist, so what? Sue me. Obviously, there's not 26 million of them marching in the streets. Most people are naturally sheep, they're followers. And I'm glad, because if everybody was fighting over this microphone, if there's 26 million people lined up, we'd never be able to leave, right?
Yeah.
Everybody cannot be a chief. There has to be a certain number of Indians, and that's cool. Yeah. So 26 million people need what? They need you guys. What do they need you for? For your leadership, for your activism, to be the first one in the room to say, you know, I don't think it's cool that there are 11 million illegal Mexicans in America. Or if someone tells a politically incorrect joke and looks around for support, you be the one grinning and nodding at them. Right? In the meantime, we need to be the first ones out of those trenches, on the front lines, moving forward for our people's sake. They need leaders. And ultimately, you're going to look back on this time right now in the future, and you're going to ask yourself, if we won, could we have won faster and with fewer casualties? If I had stepped up quicker and spoken louder? And if we do lose, which I don't think we will, I have faith, but if we do lose, are you going to wonder if you should have acted faster, hit a little harder, swung a little quicker? Because ultimately, we're going to be judged by what we do here in the very near future. I am. And my wife can tell you I don't have any trouble sleeping. I can fall asleep anytime. But that's because in my heart, while I am imperfect and I always want to try to do more and better, my conscience is clear that my whole existence, my whole life is based on the 14 words and our people. That is the most important essence of my being. And I don't ask that of all of you. I know that you all have other family priorities. But I will tell you that as the leader of the Showalt Network, I will never ask more of you than I demand of myself. So what I ask of you is that when you leave this meeting today, having made these new friends as I am, that you go back to your local communities and you take the Showalt Network program with you to learn how to become a person of influence in your communities, because we know what's coming. And our enemies smell it too. They smell the blood in the water. They know the time is getting close. We have to be as ready as we possibly can. And that means making connections, networking, not hiding from the world and thinking that the storm will pass us by. We need to be the ones bringing the storm to our enemies. So take with you this program. Read about it on the website. Network with everyone in this room and everyone that you know. And we will teach you how to become that person of influence in your local community by cherry-picking and recruiting people that are close to us that can be radicalized and move further right towards us. We're talking about gun owners and Second Amendment supporters. We're talking about veterans. We're talking about people that are members of the Republican Party and on the right-wing conservative fringe of that, Tea Party people and activists. People who are where some of us were just a few years ago. And moving them further right to where we are. It's called the radical flank effect. And it's what I do every day. I'm that extremist. I'm the one who is out there on the fringe. I'm that guy. I'm the bad guy. Shout out to the bad guy, right? I'm the guy who's out there that's making wiggle room just to my left for other people to be comfortable saying kind of sort of what I say in a more moderate and palatable manner. But because I'm being the extremist, it's then more acceptable for them to say virtually the same thing in a little bit softer way. But if I wasn't out there being the radical, using the radical flank effect, then they would be, and most people can't handle that. I don't care.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're at a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.